We have the best volunteers, and not just in our band, but in our coffee bar, our greeters, our ushers. We value them. We place high importance on what they do. So hopefully you've been treated well at church this morning. And I really hope that I can follow up and I can live up to their standard over this next 95 to 120 minutes. If you're new, that's really scary. If you're not new, you know I'm probably kidding. I'm so happy to... we're starting off our Christmas series. Over the next 3 weeks, we're going on a Christmas series, and Pastor Matt, who's in Mexico, wishes you well. Give his family a hug, because they're probably feeling a little hurt that their dad is gone and their husband's gone and they're stuck here. He's enjoying some time with his family, and so I'm so glad to be able to share with you this morning. And the name of our series is Designed to Give. I had a thought the other day, and as I was kind of looking around, and we had a course of this series, but I wanted an image, and that's what brought me to a tree. And a tree is special and significant in the fact that during the daytime, when it's exposed to sunlight, there's something called photosynthesis, and what actually happens is it converts CO2 to oxygen in the daylight. And in that small little picture, I see a picture of God, of the heart of God. I see a picture of the heart of God, and that he takes what we exhale, our brokenness, our darkness, and he's actually turning it into something pure that we can use into our life, and that he's refreshing us, that he's renewing us, that he's giving new life. And so in that way, trees are designed to give. In the same way, we want to get over the course of this series into our head that the human experience is designed to give, that God designed us to give. This is what Winston Churchill said. He said, "We make a living by what we get. We make a life by what we give." Muhammad Ali said, "Service to others is the rent you pay for the room here on earth." And Buddha was quoted as saying, "Thousands of candles can be lighted from a single candle, and the life of the candle will not be shortened. Happiness never decreases by being shared." And so there's something in programmed into all of us, no matter what our culture or upbringing was, there's something innate in us that understands that we are designed for more than just absorbing, that our lives are actually fundamentally better when we give. Our human experience is designed to give. We're built in relationship. We're built not just in relationship, but in dependency with one another. And so there's this onus and responsibility on us to give, because that's the way we were designed. And as we enter into Christmas, we look to the greatest example of giving and how God gave us his son, Jesus, and how God came to earth. And it's the greatest gift. But it's not only a gift in and of itself, but in God giving Jesus to us, we also have a template for how we can then live our lives. Because we look at the life of Jesus, and if we model the life of who Jesus was, we understand that his life was a life of giving. And so our lives, the best version of our lives, we believe, is a life designed to give. So that's where we're going over the next couple of weeks. And this morning, I want to share to you for a little bit on the topic called It's Connected. It's Connected. When I had just gotten married, Katie, my wife, and I, we had not, Katie is my wife, not Katie, my wife, and I. Katie, my wife, and I, we moved into a one-bedroom basement suite together, and I had just been through 4 years of college, and I don't know if any of you have this experience. Do you know that a roommate is just a little different than a spouse in terms of expectations? I kind of learned this the hard way. We got into marriage, and I love my downtime. I love escaping, and so I'd get home from work, and I'd be reading a book, or I'd be playing video games, and I'd be watching a movie. And my wife was in the middle of school, and so she was doing all these other things, but I noticed that she was getting a little stressed from time to time. And this is what I learned about my wife in reality, more than just words, that my wife doesn't function well without a clean house. Anyone else there? You can't do anything unless the house is clean. You need some semblance of order. Well, I didn't get that right at the beginning because I was used to a roommate and we just kind of did whatever we wanted. But I noticed it affected the posture of my wife and her behavior towards me specifically. Because, you know, to her credit, you know, she would be doing work, but she was working, she was in school, she was doing homework. It's not like she was doing nothing and I was doing everything. It's far from it. We were both very busy. And it took me some time to realize that if I made an effort to clean my house, it was connected to my wife's mood on any given time. And at first, that was a little self-serving. And then I got to the point where I heard it from someone in a message, and it says, we need to learn to give love like others know how to receive it. Like others know how to receive it. You can't just give love the way that you receive love. You have to give love and give respect the way that other people do that. And I was kind of doing it for self-serving, but then I had to look into my heart and said, okay, well, if I want my wife to value me, then I need to show that I value her. And I love my wife, and I do value her. And so my behavior shifted, and I started making an effort to clean the house and to put in the work, even though we were both working, even though at that time you got to do the dishes, you got to take care of that stuff. And when you have two kids, it's not any easier. But you have to make that extra effort. But I understood that they were connected. They were connected. And so I want to talk about how there's an element in our life and how what we give to others that's connected to our relationship with God. There's an aspect of our connectedness to life with one another that's connected with our life with God. And so I want to look at a very simple Bible verse this morning. I'm going to break it down in a whole bunch of different ways. I'm going to talk different stuff. Not a bunch of different ways, a couple ways. And so we're going to turn to, if you have your Bibles, if you're taking notes, to Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. And we're going to talk about the golden rule this morning. We're going to share a little bit about the golden rule. And if you're Christian or if you're non-Christian, you've heard of the golden rule or variations of it. And so we're going to break this down from a couple of different aspects and talk about why this aspect of the golden rule, why it can be so transformational in our lives, and it's the life that Jesus wants us to live. And so it says in Matthew, "Do to others whatever you would like them to do to you. This is the essence of all that is taught in the law and the prophets." And so everything that had been introduced, pretty much the whole Old Testament up until that point, Jesus summarized into this one, he boiled it down into this one thing: do to others whatever you would like them to do. This is the essence of the heart of God. And so if Jesus says, if you can boil all of the Bible down to one thing, we should probably pay attention to that one thing. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about how we, on a human level, kind of wrestle with this golden rule, with this philosophy, how culture has kind of informed it, and then ultimately how Jesus phrases it and why that is so transformational in our lives and why it can have a huge impact, not just on you, but definitely on the people around you and your community. And so on this level, the verse, we're having problems with it. That's okay. On this verse, I want to talk a little bit about what happens because the golden rule, it's not natural. It's not human nature. There's this element of like eye for an eye that we just like instinctively get. And so if we have this relationship between me and people, human nature typically goes towards something like this. You give what you receive. You give what you receive. Go ahead into the next one. And the next one. Awesome. There, we're tracking. And so what this is saying is that if you love me, then I'll love you. If my community takes me in, then I'll take them in. If they like my posts, I'll like their posts. What they do to me, I'll do to them. If they don't respect my decisions, then I won't respect their decisions. If they ignore me, then I'm going to ignore them. And while I don't think any of us would argue that this is like the ideal way for humans to behave with one another, it's also typically what we default to, especially when we're frustrated, especially when we're stressed, when things aren't in our ideal circumstances. This mindset of eye for an eye, I'll wait for them. If they treat me well, then I'll treat them. That's often what we default
to. And there are so many reasons why this fails. First off, is this philosophy is just as destructive as it is productive. Because if you give out the love that you receive, you're also going to give out the hate that you receive. And what this happens is, and what this philosophy can create in our lives, in that base human nature instinct, is, and we've seen it, that it produces cycles of violence, it produces cycles of negativity, it produces cycles of hate, and it's not an ideal way to live. It often becomes exclusive and divisive, and is really only limited to being self-serving, and this is really, like, this is a selfish way to live. It just is. If we're waiting for what people give to us before we give back, we're really only thinking about ourselves. And so we know that there's nothing altruistic or generous about this way of life. You know, there's nothing romantic. Like, there was no love story ever built on this premise. There's no Hollywood movie where the two find ultimate love that was kind of built on this premise. There's nothing romantic or supernatural. This is like cause and effect. This is the base human nature. You know, it falls apart because it doesn't really satisfy our heart's, like, deep need for love and belonging. If we're waiting for people to receive before we give, it's not really satisfying our deep need. We're always going to war with pride and entitlement in our heart of, like, a me first. Me first. If my needs are met, then I'll give. We're always going to war with our needs being met and how well our needs are met before we ever engage with our community and before we ever engage with the people around us. And so it's ultimately self-serving. And then we run into a fear that if we mess up and we say something wrong or do something wrong, that we're going to receive retribution for that. Because if we're honest with ourselves, that's what we would do to someone else if we were in exactly those shoes. If someone crossed us, then we crossed them. So if someone crosses them, why wouldn't they bring it back on me? And so it's a destructive cycle. And this doesn't really work. I mean, obviously doesn't work. And so while this may be our current default, like for like our base human nature, this attitude was never meant to be our design. We hit this place when we're stressed. We hit this place when we're angry. We hit this place when we're confused. But I want to challenge it. It was never meant to be our design. It was never meant to be our design to be selfish, to be inherently self-serving, because it doesn't fill our deep needs for love. It doesn't fill our deep needs for belonging and for community. There's something more. We need something more. And so throughout human history and culture, we get this. And this isn't just a Christian thing by and large. You can kind of look at most cultures and people groups throughout history, and they've developed some form of ethic or like code that's deeper than our base human nature. That's just representative everywhere that we go. In fact, there are several iterations even of the golden rule that have kind of happened throughout history. And I actually found out there's like a group of a whole bunch of different religious groups that like have unitedly agreed on the golden rule as kind of the standard. And so these iterations of the golden rule and these ethics from around the world have kind of largely informed our popular culture today. And the kind of the world that we see it, particularly in North America today. And so we're going to get into that. And then, like I said, into how I believe Jesus is even a better way than that. So let's talk about culture's ethic for a second here. We're going to talk about culture's ethic, and so that's the next slide. And what this basically says in a nutshell is this, is what you don't want done to you, don't do to someone else. What you don't want done to you, don't do to someone else. And so we see this in a lot of different places throughout history. Hinduism, if the entire Dharma could be said in a few words, then it's this. That which is unfavorable to us, do not do that to others. Buddhism commonly says, hurt others not in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Ancient Egypt, growing up throughout history, says, that which you hate to be done to you, do not do to another. And as ancient Greece kind of took that place and the philosophers of the day and the thinkers that kind of formed all of our platform of philosophy and knowledge, it says the common principle is what you do not want to happen to you, do not do it to yourself either. And this is largely informing a lot of what I think is going on in our current cultural moment this day. And it's not a bad philosophy. I just argue that it's not enough. And it's that this, what drives this philosophy is the idea of getting along, being nice to one another. You know, it embraces the idea that we're all different and that we can all live the way we want to as long as we don't hurt one another. As long as we're not violent to one another, as long as we're not spouting hate to one another, then we can live however we want. Because, like, you know, we're getting along in, like, these little pockets. And this isn't, and this might resonate with some of us, because our cultural moment is driven by an ethos of acceptance today. And as long as we accept people for who they are, it doesn't matter if they're different, it doesn't matter if they believe different things, as long as we accept them, then we're all good. That's all that we want. And this isn't a platform here, like my message isn't a platform to mock like contemporary sensibilities. I think we could do, we need to be accepting. I just think that this philosophy in and of itself and how it's phrased, it kind of falls short of being the best way to live, of being the best way to live. And here's why I think that. Because if our philosophy of life is don't do to others what you don't want other people to do to you, it's actually a low bar to set for relationship on a day-to-day level. It's a really low bar to say, like, well, at least they're not killing each other. Like, that's, I mean, and admittedly, in the course of human history, that's actually a really big feat. Today, in our culture here, like, as long as we're not hurting one another, is a low bar to set for relationship. We can go way deeper. There's way more in true relationship, in true unity, in true community, than not hurting one another. So it's a low bar to set for getting into relationship, for engaging with other people. And while it does well to wish away harm, it does so almost out of a means, the way it's been phrased through history and through culture, it's almost driven out of a desire for self-preservation. Because what's not present in that is a drive to actually do good to other people. It's just about ignoring, it's just about not hurting one another. It's not necessarily driven out of a desire to do good. And so while this philosophy kind of sounds good on the surface, it too falls apart because, like I said, it's not enough. It's not enough. If we focus all of our energy on not hurting or offending people, then our effort for peace just kind of turns into, like, content divisions. Do you know what I mean? It's not real peace. It's not real. And so I kind of picture it like this. You know, they're pretty walls that separate us, and we both like them, but they're still walls. It's not real unity. It robs us of an inner desire for truth and to be heard and to build real relationship. And that doesn't happen by just like, okay, well, you do you, and as long as, like, you're not in my face and bothering me, then I won't bother you. It's not a high enough standard. It's too passive in its attempt to interact with people. And it robs our life of the truth that love is more than leaving each other alone, isn't it? Love is more than leaving one another alone. And this is what this philosophy, when it happens and how it translates into our lives, this is kind of our cultural default. Is we just want to leave each other alone because we want to be left alone. Like, we want to be left alone, so we're leaving other people alone. And so it kind of mixes the both. And while we're more accepting than ever as a culture, we are more in North America, Europe, like, Western culture is more accepting than ever. And this is incredible. But here's an equally stark truth, is that we're lonelier than ever. We're lonelier than ever. In the UK, they actually hired a government position to battle the epidemic of loneliness. It's a real thing. And so it's not that being accepting is bad, far from it. It's just this passive a form of, if you don't hurt me, then I won't hurt you. Like, I'll accept you in as long as you don't hurt me. It's just not enough because we're still lonely. And so it's not fulfilling that desire for love that we feel deep inside. And so we need a better way. We need a better way. And that's what drives me to the golden rule. That's what drives me back to Matthew, because this is what Jesus suggests. And I'm calling it Christ's ethic. And I'm calling it that because throughout the history, the written history of God's people, when we read in the Bible, all the way back in the book of Leviticus and back in time when they're writing all the rules and all the regulations and the important things that God wanted people to know, God is consistent in his revelation as this. And in Leviticus it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus affirms in this, and in Luke, someone asks, like, well, I have all of this. And he says, do to others what you would have them do to you. Do to others what you would have them do to you. Now, you'd recognize how this sounds different than don't do to others what you would have them not do to you. The Message translation in the Bible kind of says this, and I love the heart of this. This is the simplest expression for what living ought to be. And you'll just have to listen to it here. Here is a simple rule of thumb guide for behavior. Ask yourself what you want people to do for you, and then grab the initiative and do it for them. Add up God's law and the prophets, and this is what you get. Simple rule of thumb. What would you want people to do for you? And then take the initiative and go do it for them. See, this goes beyond the idea, and why I think this is so beautiful is because, and why this drives real relationship, because it goes beyond the empathy needed to step in someone else's shoes. That's something that we all need. We all need to be able to see the needs of others for what they are and to understand people's struggles. This asks us to go further than that. This asks us to examine ourselves. It asks us to recognize, what are my deep needs? What's my need? We need to recognize the need for relationship and for hope and for grace in our own lives, and then begin to satisfy that deep need however we can in the people around us. Because we all share this deep need for unity. We all share this deep need for relationship. We all share this deep need for love. And we'll get it the most, and we'll give it the most when we recognize it in ourselves. And so it's asking what you would have people do to you, how you would have people love you. You need to step out, take the initiative, and go and love your community. Go and love the people around us. You see, it challenges us to be honest with ourselves. And so it kind of cuts through that pride and entitlement of a me first and waiting for everyone to give stuff. And then it demands that we put others first. And so it's challenging us to live sacrificially. It's not just avoiding contact. It's challenging actually that we put other people first. And so I want to say this, that you don't have to be a Christian to live this way. I need to make that serious. You don't have to be a Christian to live this way, to see the need for love in your life and to give it to other people. But I want to make a suggestion for those of us who've been going to church for a while. You don't have to be a Christian to live this way, but to follow Jesus, you need to live this way. You can live this way without being a Christian, without following Jesus, without thinking that God is who he says he is and that Jesus was who he says he was. There are lots of people and organizations and communities who love this way, who love others first, who love others selflessly. And you can do that. But I want to flip this on you too, that you can't follow Jesus without loving this way. This is how Jesus challenged us to love. He says, if there's one rule of thumb thing that you need to know, like if there's one thing that I can take you away, if you remember only one thing, it's how you would want to be treated, go and treat other people. How you want to be loved, it's what we need. It's what we need. And so as we're analyzing and reviewing those things, we understand that human nature is reactive. It's about taking. Our culture is passive, and it ultimately kind of defaults to leaving each other alone. And so Jesus' love and Christ's ethic, by contrast, is active. This is kind of the DNA of Jesus, that God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. This is how we experience life, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It's about giving. It's not about taking. It's not about being left alone. It's about giving. And so Jesus recognizes that in our ethos, in our DNA, we are designed to give in an active way. And this way works. The golden rule works because it brings the deepest satisfaction to our inner being. How many of you have, and maybe as your parents and as you're older, you'd have a greater context for this. How many of you know that feeling when you give a great gift? Like it feels just as good for you as it does for them. We innately understand that gift. This is, in a spiritual sense, we also grasp this. It brings the deepest satisfaction to our inner being. It develops the most authentic relationships and builds the most honest and loving community. And it's because our lives were designed to give. This is where we find the best version of our life. Ask yourself what you would have people to do for you. Then grab the initiative and do it for them. This is God's intention for each and every one of us. And so in order to orient our lives this way, to apply this into our daily rhythm. So if you want to skip two slides, actually. Yeah, and the next one. Awesome. So if we want to live out the golden rule, here are some things that I've kind of leaned into and I want to share with you just very quickly because we're getting close to being done. If we want to live out the golden rule in our lives, if we want to live and give of ourselves differently, these are kind of some hot points that I want to leave you with. If we want to live out the golden rule, we need to be creators of culture. We need to be creators of culture. And what does this mean? I kind of had it said like this. In whatever we do, in whatever environment we're in, let's be thermostats, not thermometers. Let's be thermostats and not thermometers. Do you know that any situation you set into, what it's saying is we set the tone for whatever environment that we're in. And so if we want to be active and engaging, we need to step into any environment and to begin to live that out. We're always going to make the first move. We're not going to wait or ask permission to love someone or give of ourselves sacrificially. We're just going to treat people with excellence in everything that we do. We're just going to set the tone in how we love. And we should always be looking for creative and authentic ways to interact with each other. It doesn't have to stay within the box of religion and of church service. We're putting on a comedy show. We're hosting a comedy show on the 19th. This is an awesome way to engage people in a cool message, to bring them in to have a good time. It's a different way to love. And so to create culture, we need to set the tone in our environments and in our circles of influences. We don't want to wait and say, well, no one else is loving me. Like, yeah, start. Be a leader. Don't wait for whatever everyone else is doing. God is equipping you to live differently and to love differently. So create the culture that you want to live in. Secondly, we're not going to love because of who they are. We're not going to give because of who they are. But we're going to love and give because of who God is. And we understand, that for those of us who've been in this, that God gave us the greatest gift. And so we won't be afraid to love people because people are different from us. And we won't be afraid to love people because they are difficult to us. We're going to decide, living out this golden rule as Jesus described, that we are going to love people as a response to what God has done for us, not the things that people have done to us. We're going to give of ourselves because God is great and because his love for us is going to drive how we love our community. This is kind of where we access supernatural love. It's because it's not contingent upon whether or not people give it back. And so we won't give up on people who don't give it back. That's not why we do it. We won't love for the approval of man, but we'll do it for the approval of God. We won't do it to show off, but we're going to do our best work. We're going to give of ourselves with humility and finding those secret ways to give. This is the heart of God, not because of who they are, but we're going to love because of who he is. And then finally, we're always going to keep our hearts open towards people. And this may be the hardest one. Because in order to keep our hearts open, we need to stay sensitive to the needs of our community. It's got to be more than just good vibes. It's got to be more than Facebook posts. It's got to be more than handshakes at the church at the break time. It needs to be more than that. We need to be sensitive to the needs of our community, develop a spiritual sense to what people really need in their life and begin to activate it in them and call that out of them. It's an active. But what this means is that we need to stay vulnerable on the inside. And the challenge is that when people hurt us, we want to close our hearts. But if we're closing our hearts towards people, we're never going to be able to live the way that Jesus called us to live. We're never going to be able to love sacrificially if our hearts are closed towards people. And so one of the biggest challenges of being a Christian is the ability in developing the skill of staying vulnerable and not letting disappointment or hurts close our heart. And the Holy Spirit, I think Holy Spirit allows us to do this. Because our base instinct is to close in, shelter ourselves off, back up. But God is challenging us. Keep your hearts open. Because if your hearts are closed, you're going to miss out. If your hearts are closed, you're going to miss out. And this is significant in our lives because of this. All these three principles, the idea of the golden rule, it's significant because of this. Jesus made it clear. He made it so clear that we express our love for him, we express our love for him in how we love other people. Let's bring that next slide up. It's crude, forgive me. Jesus made it clear that we express our love for him not in this, not in the up and down, not in the going to church, not in the singing the best song. That's part of it. But Jesus made it very clear that we express our love for him not in how we look up, but in how we look out. It's not in how we look up, it's in how we look out. And what this tells us is that there's a spiritual connection between how God interacts with us and how we interact with our community. So this is how we receive favor, and this is how we receive understand relationship with God. How we treat others is connected to our relationship with God. We were designed, we are positioned, we're called by Jesus to give. I have dreams. Anyone else have like strange dreams? How many have like really strange dreams? Okay, no, put your hands down. You can stay secret. I have a recurring dream, and it always plays out in different variations, but it's always the same thing. The most common one is that I'm back in high school, and a basketball game is about to happen, and I'm late, so I get to the court, and all my friends are like, man, you got to come play, and so I'm like, okay, I want to play. I don't have any of my jerseys, I don't have my shorts, I don't have my shoes, and so the rest of my dream is to go to grab my jerseys, to grab my shoes so that I can play this basketball game. But of course, the problem is that in my dream, I can't find my locker. And so I'm looking around these familiar, you know how like in dreams, something could be familiar and foreign to you all at the same time? Like that's where I live, in my dreams anyway. And so I'm searching these hallways for this thing, and then I can't find my locker combination. I don't remember it, and I don't recognize my lock, and so I spend all this time finding this stuff. My contacts won't fit into my eye, and so I can't play, and then I miss the game. And all this is relevant to you. This isn't like a spiritual thing, but I recognize in the rhythms of my own life as an adult, because I'd have these dreams all the way up into adulthood, and I still have them to this day, but it's always at times when I know, like mentally, my brain knows that I have something to do. That I have something on my schedule that I've been either been putting off or delaying or haven't got to. If I have a stress that's weighing on me, I begin to have these dreams, and it's like my brain is trying to like tell me something in my sleep. And like Holy Spirit convicted me in that moment. It's like you need to listen to the weird things that your brain is telling you while you sleep because you need to do something. But I remember going through years where I'd have these dreams and I'd ask, why God? Like take these dreams away. Give me peace. Like, you know, give me, help me to manage that. Help me feel better, God. Like, why am I not sleeping at night? I'm spending all night dreaming. I'm holding these stuff. And this is what God is saying to me. Do your homework, Phil. Do your homework. And what I'm saying is that is spiritual restlessness, maybe that you've had that feeling in your gut, like I feel like I need to be doing something, like nothing's really satisfying me anymore. It may not have anything to do with your relation up and down between God. It may not be because you're not going to church enough. It's probably not because you're not praying enough. But spiritual restlessness is usually caused not by spiritual neglect. It's not by like forgetting to do this. It's typically about gospel and activity. And you may be discovering or may be frustrated by not feeling peace, not feeling contentment, not feeling joy. And the solution probably isn't, God, take this away from me. God, like, give me peace, give me peace, give me peace, give me peace. What I want to suggest to you is that maybe the solution is that we need to go and be peacemakers. I'm suggesting to you that our search for joy isn't found in God, give me joy, give me joy, give me joy. It's about being joy in our community and showing them authentic love. It's connected. It's connected. In one of the final conversations that Jesus had with Peter, one of his closest friends, Jesus asks Peter, do you love me? Yeah, God, of course I love you. This happens in, if you're taking notes, it's not on the screen, John 21. It says, you know, yeah, of course I love you. He asks him again, Peter, Or he's like, yeah, of course I love you. Jesus says, well, then feed my lambs. Feed my lambs. Okay. Peter, do you love me? Asks him again, second time. Do you love me? Yeah, God, I love you. Feed my sheep, Peter. Okay, okay. Then he looks at him right in the eyes. Like, I have this idea, like, you know, Peter, like, you need to hone in on this. Like, look, like, don't look at the ceiling. Stop looking at your phone. You need to look at me. Do you love me? Do you love me? And at this point, Peter's kind of offended. He's like, God, yeah, God, you know everything. Of course you know that I love you. And he says to him a third time, feed my sheep. There is this deep connection in our relationship with Jesus that is contingent upon how we interact with our community and how we're meeting the needs of our community. And so there's this aspect of we receive from God as we give to people. We receive from God as we give to people. It's connected. It's not exclusive. It's not of holding up stores of spiritual energy until you're ready to be unleashed into your community. Those things happen at the same time. As you step out and meet needs, God is giving you the contents and the desires of your dreams and your heart and your calling. But that happens as we step out. And another interesting thing that happened is as God is using you to bless other people. God is blessing you, and then God is blessing people. This is the unity, and this is the mission. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. We discover the blessing in our lives when we are the blessing in our community. We discover hope when we are hope. We discover joy when we are joy. We discover peace when we are peace to those around us. This is what following Jesus looks like. A community that finds the deepest source of life, the deepest sense of purpose, not in looking towards themselves, but by being motivated by loving the people around them. This is the reward that we receive on this earth. The blessing and the favor that we have from God. This is the life of reward that we have. This is the path of following Jesus in our life. We actually find wholeness by giving ourselves away. It's ironic, isn't it? We find wholeness by giving ourselves away. This is the cause of Christ. It isn't only about God, but it's connected. It's connected in how we give to people. It's connected in how we give to people. This is how we find grace. This is how we find mercy. This is how we find hope. And so I want to leave you guys with some practical takeaways this morning, and we're just about ready to wrap up. And so some practical takeaways is examining ourselves. Are we reactive, passive, or active in how we interact with our circles of influence? How do we look? Maybe we've never even looked at it in those terms, but I'm going to challenge you today and this week through prayer, through contemplation, and observing your default behaviors. How is it that you engage with your community around you? Is it reactive? Is it passive? Well, I'm like, you know, if they're good, then I'm good. If they're good, then I'm good. If they're good, then I'm good. And you don't bother anyone. Or is it active? Is it active? There's a better way. There's a better way. And then next, what do we recognize as a deep longing in our own hearts that we could step out and give to someone else this week? Church, community, family, friends, maybe your guests. We're designed to give. This is the best version of our lives. We're built, and not just in relationship with God, but we're designed in relationship with one another. And we discover the fullness of life and how we give to other people. We discover the fullness of life, all that God has for us, all the blessings of God, not in by hoarding spiritual experiences, but by giving out the gospel and being the gospel in what we say and what we do. This is what we were designed for. And we all have that deep longing for love. And maybe you're here this morning and Jesus has met that need in your hearts. And recognizing that met need in your hearts and recognizing the place that you were in before you encountered Jesus, I really think that you have a responsibility to go out and communicate and fulfill that desire and to bring that hope to the people around you. This is what the mission of sharing the gospel. Jesus' last words were to go and make disciples in every nation. This is the heart of following Jesus. It's not hoarding religious experiences. It's about loving our community differently.
It's about reaching our community in a powerful, sincere, authentic way, building real relationships, valuing people for who they are, children of God. And so what do you recognize as a deep longing within your own heart? So maybe you've been frustrated by something, maybe something's going on, and maybe a solution isn't more time resting. Maybe a solution isn't escaping to video games, my default. Maybe the solution is you need to step out and give out what you're hoping to receive and unlock something in your relationship with Father God as you step out and you do his work in practical and powerful ways.